Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Patrick Magnus of Over the Monster and the Dynasty Guru. This is your April 21st edition of the show, and we will discuss on this show the call-up of Michael Chavis, the injuries to Dustin Pedroia and Nathan Eovaldi, as well as some pretty encouraging developments from the Red Sox. So first of all, Patrick, how are you?
Jake, I'm great. There's a chance we might sweep the Rays. This is fantastic.
Yeah, so Patrick and I are recording this in the eighth inning of the Red Sox-Rays game on Sunday. So right now they're leading 3-2. So hopefully nothing catastrophic happens while we're on here recording the podcast.
Yeah, no late Yandy Diaz home runs. Let's just make it less stressful if we can. As less stressful as one run lead can be anyways.
Yeah, this whole series has been a real nail biter. So let's get right into it here. So Pedroia headed to the IL earlier in the week with a pop that he heard in his left knee. Eduardo Nunez headed to the IL with some back pain, and the Red Sox brought up Michael Chavis, their top prospect, according to most lists, and Su-Wei Lin to replace them on the roster. So I guess the big name here is Michael Chavis. So what are your thoughts on these guys in terms of what type of a job they can do replacing the production that they were getting at second base, or I should say weren't getting at second base?
So I'm really interested in what kind of playing time is going to shape up for Chavis. I'm really high on the bat. I think that it could be a source of power that he kind of sort of reminds me of Dan Uggla a little bit. If you look at him, he's kind of short and jacked. Like Uggla was. And I'll just be curious about how much playing time he's going to get at second base. Did he start at second today?
Yeah, he did. And he actually turned a double play today.
Whoa. All right. So, yeah, I'm excited about him. You know, I worry about the defense. You know, Lin is going to probably get most of the starts, but Chavis could easily play himself into the lineup on an everyday basis.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple things that are interesting there. First of all, Lin is just going to come up here and provide really, really stable defense. He's been up with the Red Sox a number of times, and when he's up, he performs really well with the glove. And he's a guy that on days that Chavis starts, he can come in as a late-inning replacement, too, if the Red Sox have the lead. So that's a really good luxury. But we got a little glimpse of what Michael Chavis can do with the bat. In Saturday's just completely epic game that the Red Sox played against the Rays, where it ended up being 5-5, and Chavis had that huge double off Jose Alvarado, a 99.2-mile-an-hour pitch that he ended up cleaning out, which was just super impressive for a guy coming up in his first major league at bat in a pinch hit situation. Late in the game against the first place team in the division. It was really, really something to watch.
Yeah, it was. That was a beautiful swing too. And then it looked like Kiermaier got kind of crossed up, which is seemed like a rare mistake for him out there in center field. But it was great. I think it left the bat at like 109 miles per hour. So he's got some thunder. And if you look at like the steamer projections. They have him with 22 at bats this year, small amount of bats, but they give him a home run and almost a 200 ISO.
nice.
So I'm all for that.
Yeah. And I think that what we have to talk about here is, that this is, I think, going to be a pretty substantial upgrade, this duo, over what we were seeing before, because Eduardo Nunez has been struggling the entire year. He's got a negative WRC plus, if I'm not mistaken. He's basically been a zero with the bat. And then his defense is just not good at second base. And we saw that right before he went on the IL. He had an error that cost the team a run. We've kind of seen that throughout the year. So with Lin, you get great defense. And with Chavis, you get some pop. So I think it's going to be a huge improvement.
Totally agree. obviously he is a young kid, and you worry about just first season in the majors. But regardless, we've talked about how big a hole second base has been in the lineup. So, I think the situation has improved just with his arrival.
Yeah, this is one of the big holes that we were talking about when we were diagnosing the problems on the team. So that's a good thing. Pedroia did get some good news in regards to his knee, though. He's going to be back, he says, after the 10 days on the IL. Apparently, the doctor said that popping sound that he heard in his knee is normal, which is really weird. But, I've never had knee cartilage replacement, so I can't speak to that. But my question for you, Patrick, is do you believe that Pedroia is actually going to be healthy and, like, able to play daily when he comes back?
No, I'm too much of a, I have too much cynicism in me, too much New England, I think. I do not think that he can be an everyday player anymore. He just looks like a shell of himself out there on the field. It just kind of makes me sad to watch him play. I know he's worked so hard to get back, but man, it just, is brutal right now. I don't think that his knees are going to let him play back-to-back games on a regular basis for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and that I'm kind of with you. Let me just say that right off the bat. I really doubt Pedroia's ability to stay healthy and stay on the field and contribute in a meaningful way to the team. And I just think that this knee thing is just, it might prove to be the end of his career. Certainly is starting to look like that. You don't want to bury the guy before he actually, does everything he can do, especially since he's been such an important part of the team for all these years. But I'm pretty skeptical. And I think the bigger question for me is, like, when these 10 days are up, who does Pedroia actually replace on the roster? Because if Chavis is hitting, if he's adding an offensive spark, it's going to be really tough to take that guy away. And then Lynn gives you so many more possibilities defensively than Pedroia or Nunez do. He can play outfield. He can play all the infield positions. It's a really difficult case to make that either Pedroia or Nunez deserves a spot on this roster over the two guys that are up right now.
Yeah, totally agree. If I had to guess, I would imagine that both Chavis and Lynn will be back in the minors for a bit, at least, until, Chavis proves that he does not belong there at all and the Red Sox get desperate enough until Pedroia is hurt again. So I do think that when push comes to shove, both these guys are headed back to the minors, but I don't necessarily think that's the way it should be. just based on the things that you said and the hole that has been that spot in the lineup. So we'll see.
Yeah, Cora is going to have a difficult decision to make when that happens because the team is starting to kind of click right now. And, we're at the point, I don't know where we're at in the eighth inning right now, but, we could potentially have a sweep of the they're tied it up. But still potential for them to accomplish that. Ooh, wow, run off Matt Barnes.
So the second one in 2 days.
If they start to roll with these guys in the lineup, it's going to be pretty difficult for a team that's already underperformed this year to make any changes if it's starting to work. So I don't know. It's going to be something to think about. That's for sure.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
That's sort of off the main trail here for a second. Is there anyone in the bullpen that makes you more nervous than Heath Hembree?
Let me think about that. Anybody in the bullpen?
When he came into the game yesterday
yeah.
To try to get Porcello out of that like mini jam he got himself into. I was dying inside. I was so nervous. I don't trust him at all.
I will say the one guy I trust less than him is Tyler Thornburg.
Yeah, Thornburg's got the velocity though, and you know, and he has a history of being good. Hembree doesn't even have that.
No, Hembree has always been kind of a turd. I don't really get why Hembree or Thornburg are on the roster. I guess it's because they just have no one else right now that they think is better than them. But, you know, I think I could make a pretty decent argument that a whole number of guys down at the minor leagues are better than those two. So, yeah, I'm with you. I was petrified when he came into that game. And, I mean, look at what happened. That was clearly the wrong decision in yesterday's tilt.
Yeah. It was scary.
Yeah, so during that time, Hembree comes in right after Rick Porcello, immediately gives up a run. Bobby Pointer gives up a run right after that, and then Matt Barnes gives up a run later on. So, you know, you're two runs right away off of weak links that probably shouldn't have been in the game. I wouldn't have put Hembree in the game right after Porcello. I would have probably gone to one of my stronger options. I would have certainly gone to Matt Barnes when Bobby Pointer was put in the game. That I would have used him earlier in such an important contest.
Yeah, it was Pointer was just a matchups play, right? I mean, he's just doing his job coming in as the lefty. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what Cora was doing.
Yeah, he was. Pointer just didn't look great. You know, he doesn't have any outstanding stuff right now, and I think that that's kind of an issue. So let's talk about the bullpen a little bit more. Did this game to you highlight any more concerns of lack of depth at the bullpen? Because we've already mentioned a few of the names that aren't so great. In Hembree and Thornburg and, you know, Pointer when he's up right now. Hector Velasquez is sort of hit or miss. Colton Brewer can be hit or miss as well. He looked great today. Marcus Walden is sort of an up and down guy. What's your level of worry with this unit?
Oh my God, I'm having a panic attack right now just thinking about it. I know that they have performed well, and that, you know, the whatever momentum we've created, you know, kind of is on the backs of the bullpen at this point based on the performance of the starters. But just on paper, it's terrifying. And like watching, like, I don't feel comfortable with anybody out there. Yeah, Walden is interesting. I think it was you that said that all of his pitches have a ton of movement on them. It just makes me nervous because he has trouble locating them. I'm terrified of that whole bullpen.
Yeah, I think in terms of confidence right now, I would rank it Barnes, Brazier. After him, I'm probably going, if we're counting Longman, Velasquez, then Workman. No, probably Workman, then Velasquez, then Brewer, then Walden, and then it sort of like completely drops off for me. And I have no confidence in Hembree, Thornburg, or Pointer, or anybody else.
Yeah, and the strategy of only using Brazier and Barnes for high leverage situations, I think they need at least one more guy that they can trust like that in the bullpen in order for it to be, you know, stable. I really think they need at least one more solid guy in there to make that strategy work long term.
Yeah, and they have, you know, a couple more guys on the 40-man down at AAA who they could try. They could try the lefty Josh Taylor, who's, you know, kind of a older guy at this point. He's 26 and he still hasn't gotten a whole lot of time up in the major leagues. I'm not even sure if he's debuted yet. But Lakins is another guy, but Lakins hasn't really been right this year in terms of stuff or velocity, and I guess the conditioning was a little worse for him, so he hasn't been a great option. You really have to look all the way down to Durbin Feltman and Darwinson Hernandez down at AA for guys who could come up and make an impact over guys like that.
Yeah, and do you think we'll see either of them up in the majors this season?
I think we'll see both up in the majors this season. I just hope that it's sooner rather than later. It seems like the more likely of the two to make it up soon is Feltman, because he really doesn't have almost anything to work on anymore. But I think Darwinson still needs to work on his control, and they've been still continuing to try him as a starter. So it seems like Feltman would be the guy, and I don't really know what they're waiting for with him. I don't think there's a whole lot that he has to do, and I think that he would be a massive upgrade over most of the guys we named.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, obviously, if there's service time issues, he won't be up. But yeah, I'm not totally sure why he isn't up yet either. And as far as Darwinson goes, I definitely think he could make some spot starts for the team this year and could even come out of the bullpen at the end of the year, because they were talking about him, you know, as making the roster potentially in the spring. And he's got electric stuff. Just like you said, he needs to harness it, needs to learn to control. But I think that he could get away with his stuff in the bullpen, and I think he would be a great addition.
Yeah, his stuff is just completely filthy, and it's true bat-missing stuff. So you can bring him in there in high-leverage roles, kind of like you do with Barnes, and expect him to miss bats with men on base. So I really like that option there. Let's talk about the starting pitching here a little bit, because since we last talked, Patrick, the starting pitching has gotten quite a bit better. We had that weird Chris Sale start against Oakland that was like good but also bad because his velocity was off. We already talked about that, but since we've last spoken, Rick Porcello threw his first good game on Saturday. Nate Eovaldi pitched really well before getting the bad news about his elbow, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And Eduardo Rodriguez and David Price have pitched really well for a couple starts in a row. So things are kind of looking up there.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of promise with Sale sort of getting his velocity back against the Yankees and striking out six, walking one. You know, I'm hopeful that he's going to turn things around. And then Erod makes me nervous every time he's out there. every game it feels like a grind to just try to make it through six innings. But, you know, there's potential there. And Porcello finally looked like himself. Mostly yesterday, you know, Cora pulled the string on him pretty quick after he had sort of a troubling inning, got out of that. And then I think he walked a batter in his last inning, and Cora gave him the hook. No problem, because let's get some positive starts out of these guys. So, yeah, much better, more, at least room for optimism. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. Definitely room for optimism with all those guys. In terms of Sale, though, still he's kind of the one that we're waiting for to have a vintage performance, because, like you said, Rick Porcello like controlled the walks yesterday, only walked one guy. Had five strikeouts, looked kind of like normal Rick Porcello, but we haven't seen a Sale start yet where he's put everything together. We saw the velo last start, but we didn't see the control or command. And, you know, we saw control and command against Oakland, but we didn't see velo. So it's going to be interesting to see if next start he can kind of put that all together.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. At this point, I've completely bought into the Red Sox narrative, because it's been happening. You know, like he went from throwing, 89 on his fastball, averaging 89 on his fastball, to throwing 96 within a few weeks. You know, I'm buying what the Red Sox say they're doing here. Do I think it was the right plan? Not necessarily, but we'll know that at the end of the year, I guess. But I am totally buying into to Sale rebounding here.
Yeah, my level of worry about Sale has gone down significantly since I saw him throw 97 in that last start. So I've never quite seen a pitcher like Chris Sale before, and I probably won't see anybody like him quite again. But he's interesting, man. We pointed that out on Locked On. We were just talking about how it's just so weird to see a guy gain velo so quickly, but as Matt pointed out, like, he's a guy that does it kind of with his frame and not a guy who does it with, you know, muscle. It's the same way that, like, a Nate Eovaldi goes out there and, like, is just a physical freak who can throw 99. Like, Chris Sale is doing this with his long levers.
Yeah, he's definitely not using, like, body mass or anything to produce the velocity. You know, it's all about that leverage for him.
Yep, that's for sure. But we do need to talk about Nate Eovaldi. We did get some bad news on Eovaldi concerning his elbow. He is headed to the IL with loose bodies in his elbow. He's not positive if he's going to need surgery yet. He did have a similar procedure to this where he needed to take, I think it was almost 2 months off for the surgery, the recovery, and then to get back into a throwing procedure or throwing program, I should say. So my question to you, Patrick, is who should replace him if he does end up needing to get surgery? We have a couple options. We have Hector Velasquez, who seems to be the most likely guy. He's been filling in as sort of a long man or spot starter. There's also Mike Schwarren, who has been pitching really well down at AAA Pawtucket. Or would you go with an outside option, maybe trying to sign a guy like Dallas Keuchel?
I mean, I'm all for signing Keuchel. I like Keuchel quite a bit. But depending on what those two teams can work out. So that would be my top option in a dream world, to bring him in, for a while. However, I don't know that you want to tie up that many years into another starting pitcher, as the Red Sox have done. So I don't know if it's a realistic option. I really think that what they'll probably end up doing is going with Hector Velasquez, and just kind of riding it out, depending on how severe the injury ends up being to Eovaldi. But Velasquez should, at least be plug the hole in the ship for a bit. But if it's a long-term injury, which, I believe this is the same injury he had when he was with Tampa, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So, there's a strong possibility here that he ends up going under the knife. And what a bummer, since they just signed him for 4 years. So I think it's Velasquez. What do you think, though? I'm curious to get your opinion. If Eovaldi is out for the year, is Velasquez enough?
No, certainly not. I think if he's out for the year, you need to entertain the idea of signing a guy like Keuchel, or maybe picking up Gio Gonzalez, who just opted out of his deal with New York or something like that, because you need a guy who's going to be able to eat innings. And Velasquez just simply isn't ready for a full starter's load right now. I mean, the guy said he couldn't feel his legs after throwing 4 innings against Arizona his first time out. And then he looked like junk on the marathon day game as well. So I just don't think that he's built up enough to be a real starting option. And I think if you're going to be plugging in a guy like Velasquez, you're going to be killing your back end of your pen, because you're going to be using those guys early in games that he starts. Keuchel has been reportedly willing to take a 1-year deal, which makes that quite a bit more interesting too. But then again, like, you have to think that the Sox might have been willing to offer a high money 1-year deal to Kimbrel too. Maybe they did, or maybe they weren't even willing to do that. So I'm not sure that they'd be willing to even foot the bill for 1 year of Dallas Keuchel. It seems far more likely that they'd go with an outside option like a Gio or something like that that's not going to cost them very much money. And, like, am I excited about Gio? No, not really, not at this point in his career. But he could probably come out and pitch 5 to 6 innings every time, which is something that you definitely need that you're not guaranteed to get from Velasquez.
Yeah, actually, Gio would make a lot of sense for exactly what we need. So, yeah, hopefully – I mean, yeah, you're right. Like you said, for this point in his career, you can't really be excited, but you can trust him to throw the ball. So that's something.
Yeah, he's been durable, if nothing else.
He'll probably be able to feel his legs after four innings, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so. So out of these two units now, we've had, I don't know, 3-4 weeks of baseball or something, 3 weeks of baseball. Which one are you more confident in, the rotation or the bullpen?
The rotation. Can you believe that? I'm more comfortable with the rotation. I just have more confidence that the rotation is coming around and will come around. But that bullpen just seems like such an illusion to me. And I just am uncomfortable every game that is that when it's turned over to them, I get uncomfortable immediately. So for me, it's the bullpen. What about yourself?
I think I'm definitely more comfortable with the rotation than I am the bullpen. I kind of always figured that there was too much talent in this rotation for it to continue to be this bad. And we've already seen that starting to turn, as we were talking about on today's podcast. But I mean, they're going to need to get either really aggressive with call-ups or aggressive at the trade deadline to plug some of the big holes in the bullpen. So like I've said before on different podcasts, this podcast, Locked On, other podcasts, it's befuddling to me that they didn't add to this bullpen, because what we're not worried about is Barnes and Brazier, right? What we're worried about is getting to Barnes and Brazier, and we've seen that be a problem early on. So it's only going to be a bigger problem as guys get more innings, and God forbid a guy like Barnes or Brazier gets hurt. I mean, then you're extra screwed, right?
Yeah, and if Barnes or Brazier gets hurt, I don't know what this team does. You can see a real lack of depth here for such a competitive team. Like once one of the starters gets hurt, it's really tough to plug a hole pitching wise. The Red Sox just don't necessary depth to field a competitive rotation or bullpen with injuries.
Yeah, certainly not. They don't have the depth of a team like the Yankees or the Dodgers or some of these other great teams. So.
Yeah, or the Braves.
Yeah.
Braves, you know, who have suffered. They've suffered a few setbacks and injuries for their rotation, but they're so deep in their minor leagues, it's no problem.
Well, we are going to be moving on to our listener question segment. But first, before we do that, we have an announcement. The Red Seat podcast is no longer going to be called The Red Seat. As part of us becoming part of a larger network of podcasts here at SB Nation, they have decided to name us the Over the Monster podcast. So when you search for us on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcast, you're going to be searching for Over the Monster. Now, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. There were two Over the Monster podcasts, ours and the original that was done a few years ago. So under our podcast, it will say SB Nation, and under the other Over the Monster podcast, it will say just Over the Monster. So click on the one that says SB Nation, and that will be the one that you want to subscribe to. We are working on getting rid of the other one at this point, so there are not two when you search for us. But if you're looking for the Red Seat, it is no longer findable. So we are now the Over the Monster podcast.
RIP Red Seat.
I know. Such a great name.
It was a great name.
All right. Let's move on to some happier things. Listener questions from you guys. And you always tend to come out with listener questions when we have Patrick on the show. And when we have Keaton on the show, nobody asks any questions. So, yep.
I'll take it. The people want to ask me questions.
The
sure.
People really respond to you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Our first one comes from Red Sox Unfiltered, and he says, has Christian Vasquez usurped Babe Ruth as the greatest baseball player in history?
No, but the dude can hit some clutch home runs, can he?
He can. He almost had his fourth today, or I think it might have been almost his fifth. I can't remember how many he has, but he put a charge into one today that I thought was going to be out when it came off the bat, too. So surprising. He's you know, he ends the game with his arm. He's playing second base. He's doing a lot of things this year. So not quite better than Babe Ruth, but pretty good.
Maybe he worked with J.D. Martinez in the offseason to improve that swing.
Hopefully he didn't work with the guy that Jackie worked with, because that's not working. Our next one comes from Jackson, who has Wheels with Traction. And this is just for you, Patrick, because this weirdo has asked us this same weird question several times in the podcast and keeps asking the weird question. So we will ask the weird question of you. If you have a life-size cheese statue of anyone on the team, who are you picking and why?
okay. I would probably have to take Mookie Betts, simply because he's my favorite Red Sox at this current moment. And if I'm going to have a cheese statue, I'm going to want to have my favorite player and the best player on the team.
So what type of cheese would it be made out of for you?
Maybe some like Cabot habanero cheddar.
Ooh,
something like that.
Like
something,
a true Vermonter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah, love it. Okay, good. Good pick. Next question comes from Ward, and he says, what's the highest price the Sox should be willing to pay for Keuchel? What do you think about that?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm so bad at this, putting prices on players like that.
Let's say it's a one-year deal. Let's say he...
I know. I'm thinking like 15 or 12. I know that seems quite expensive. But I was just thinking about the extension that Chris Davis got. So Chris Davis got an extension for like $12 million. I know they're different players, but for a one-year deal, I think you're probably going to have to pay more. So I think something in that range.
I would probably top it out at 14. 14 for Keuchel. That would be my number. Matt Bomford asks our next question. He says, is this the year that Jackie Bradley Jr. finally starts to lose playing time because of his offense? This guy's slashing 148, 197, 180 with zero home runs. It's just the same old story every season with Jackie. I know, Matt, we are super frustrated with Jackie and his bat. He did have a hit today, I want to say, or yesterday. I can't remember. They all blend together. But, yeah, Jackie's been brutal, but I don't ever see him losing playing time because of his bat. I just don't know who they'd play over him. What do you think?
He's not going to lose playing time. And, you know, I would just I want to say exercise patience, Matt and Jake and everyone. Jackie will come around. Just give him time. Let him slug himself through this. He'll start heating up.
All right. Patience. Jeff Wax asks our next question. He says, what is the bullpen solution moving forward? I think for me, the bullpen solution starts with adding Durbin Feltman to the roster and ends with quickly adding Darwinson Hernandez and possibly an arm. Well, I definitely think an arm at the trade deadline as well. I think you're going to end up having to use both those guys and a guy that you bring in via trade. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think you need this bullpen right now is teetering. It feels like it's walking on a tightrope, and I would love to have both those guys up. And you know, Kimbrel is still out there. I don't know what's going to happen with him. Who's going to sort of show their hand first? But it still remains a possibility.
Yeah, I would like to see that. That would be a nice reunion. Our next question comes from Keegan Ernest. And he says, what's the role of Chavis moving forward once Nunez, Holt, and Petey are healthy? I think the easy one here is the one with Holt, right? When Holt gets back, the Sox will probably stop carrying 13 pitchers, and they'll send down one of those arms. So he'll just slot in. We'll have a four-man bench again. But we kind of already addressed the part with Nunez and Petey, and that's going to be a big discussion going forward.
Yeah. You know, I think what's going to happen I think Chavez just ends up back down in the minor leagues to give himself more work and more an everyday playing time at second base if that's going to be his future. Which, do you think that's going to be his future? Do you think now that he is going to slide into second base potentially full-time at some point this year?
I mean, I think it makes the most sense. I don't necessarily think his trade value is so high that, you know, it's, you're going to be motivated to move him. And if he can play passable second, like, I think he might be the heir apparent to Pedroia. So, I don't know. Kind of starting to believe that that's where he's going to play.
Yeah, I believe it. That's what I think that eventually happens.
Next question comes from Colin Preston. He says, does Dombrowski get too much criticism for emptying the farm considering how little those prospects have accomplished? I love this question, by the way. I think this is the best question that we got today. And I do think that Dombrowski gets too much criticism because aside from the Shaw deal with Thornburg, I don't think that you can point to a single deal that he has made where you can really say that that wasn't worth it. I think he won every deal.
Ooh, I agree. Yeah, I agree twofold. One, that he gets too much criticism for emptying the farm. And then also that, yeah, I think he did win the majority of his trades. The Shaw one obviously is the glaring mistake, but I just am so uncomfortable with having such a thin farm system. You know, I think the Red Sox fans in particular have had such a strong farm system for so long that it just kind of feels revealing not having depth at all. But hard to argue with the results.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't feel comfortable. But if we go back, let's just say, let's look at, October 2016 prospects list, okay, on Sox Prospects. So number one was Yoan Moncada. Great, he's playing well, but he netted you Chris Sale. Andrew Benintendi, a star on the team right now. Rafael Devers is number three. He's on the team right now. Jay Groom, number four, still on the team but dealing with injuries. Number five, Michael Kopech. He helped you get Chris Sale. Then you have Sam Travis, who turned out to be nothing at six. Luis Alexander Basabe also helped you get Chris Sale. Brian Johnson on the team. Marco Hernandez on the team but injured. Mauricio Dubon, part of that bad Thornburg trade. Bobby Dalbec and CJ Chatham still in the system. Josh Ockamy's still in the system. Chavis just played second base today. And then a whole bunch of nothing after that. So I don't necessarily think that he made many bad calls here. And if you go back even further to, like, times when they had Manny Margot, you know, the trade for Craig Kimbrell, that wasn't a bad trade when you look at that either, you know?
It's true. I mean, you're absolutely right, and all the evidence is on your side. I just wish that there was more depth for the team. It just feels, and I get uncomfortable just trading away. Maybe it's just the fact that I've played so much dynasty baseball in my life. I don't know.
Yeah, I think everybody should just focus on that 2018 World Series banner whenever they think about the thin farm. And
that's true.
Know that Dave is doing a pretty good job of actually rebuilding that, because the depth in the low minors for the Red Sox is certainly a strength of the team right now.
Agreed.
Next question comes from A. Theis, and he says, do you see someone from outside replacing Eovaldi? I actually do think that's more likely if he is going to get surgery, that we bring someone in, like
a
Gio.
Yeah, NGO was is a great call.
Next question comes from CJ Roberts, and he says, can Chavis catch? CJ, I urge you to go listen to Friday's edition of the Locked On Red Sox podcast where we had on Ian Kundle, and we talked for about 20 minutes about his defense. And also, yeah, he can catch.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Check that out. Next question comes from Boston, and he says, do you think that Walden will stay permanently up in the bigs, or is he going to be a back-and-forth guy all year? I see Walden as a back and forth guy all year, right?
Yeah, for real. He's going to end up going back and forth all year, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's going to wear out that bus ride. But Walden's awesome, and he's a great story, and, you know, one of the better weapons in the bullpen. So I like him. And the only reason why he's the one riding the bus is because he has options, and a bunch of these guys don't.
Yeah.
Classic Movie Buff asks us, should the Red Sox replace Hembree with any of the San Francisco fire sale relief pitchers that will be available? Ooh. Patrick, who do you like out there?
I like Will Smith in San Francisco. I wouldn't mind having him on the team. But the cost, you know, it all depends on the cost.
Yeah, I like Will Smith a whole lot. I think if you could get Will Smith for, you know, some sort of a middling prospect or two, that would be a great add to the team. Outside of him, Mark Melancon at this juncture of his career is not super interesting. I really do like Tony Watson and Sam Dyson, though. I think that those guys are pretty decent. So I wouldn't mind adding one of them either. Sam Dyson's actually having a really good year so far.
I've been burned by Dyson too many times. I can't get on board with that. Watson, though, I'm on board with. Bring over Watson for sure.
You want to know who's actually on their 40-man right now? Old friend Williams Harris, who was on the Red Sox last year.
Well, would you look at that?
Yeah. Last question comes from California Boston fan, and he says, how much money does Xander need to make him hustle out of the box? $30 million or $50 million? And he's referring to yesterday's sort of weird play when Nate Lowe knocked down that ball that I thought he had no chance to get to, and I don't think Xander thought he had any chance to get to. I don't actually think this is a chronic issue with Xander or anything. He's not one of those guys that I notice not hustling a lot. I mean, I think he's right, but...
I think he's got one of the stronger work ethics on the team, actually. I really think that he is a hustle guy. But, yeah, that was not a great moment yesterday.
No. Yeah, when I saw that, my gut reaction was like, oh, shit, man, you got to run that out. Like, he easily – we would have had runners at the corners if he had run hard on that play. But, I mean, everybody makes a mistake, and certainly Xander isn't immune to those, so – But, yeah, pay Xander $50 million.
No.
All right. Well, that does it for the show. If you enjoyed the show, you can go on and rate and review us. We do appreciate that, especially since we are renamed and pretty now. We have different branding. And you can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow Patrick on Twitter at @TheGreenMagnus. You can follow me on Twitter at @DevJake. And you can follow the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. And we will be with you next week. So thank you, Patrick.
Hey, you're welcome, Jake. Question before we sign off here. Do you think that the fans of this podcast know what my Twitter handle means? Or what it references?
I would hope so.
I would hope so too, but I don't know. At the Green Magnus, like the Green Monster, you guys. Come on, yeah, you got it.
I'm glad we cleared that up. All right, thanks, guys. We'll be with you next week.